Enron was truly a trial of the century. It had everything: massive egos, bigger-than-life lawyers, and a massive fraud. On this special series from the Compliance Podcast Network, Tom Fox is joined by Lauren Steffi, who was a business journalist while it was all happening. Tune in for his reflections and new insights on the first trial of the century for the 21st century.
This is Tom Fox. I hope you'll join me for my five-part podcast series on the Enron trial, where with former Houston Chronicle business columnist Lauren Steffi, we take a look at his reflections 15 years later after the trial. In episode 3, we focus on the testimony. Who were the star witnesses for the prosecution? Ben Gleason and Andy Fastow devastated the defenses of Jeff Skilling and Ken Lay. What happened when both Skilling and Lay went on the witness stand, and how did Ken Lay destroy his own defense in his direct testimony, not his cross-examination? We take a look at some of the other major testimony, particularly from those affected by the Enron fraud, Enron employees, and other interesting events that took place during the Enron trial. I know you'll enjoy this podcast series.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back again with Lauren Steffi for our continued exploration of Lauren's reflections on the Enron trial. Lauren, first of all, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Lauren, I wanted to, in this part three, really take a deeper dive into some of the testimony, because there was some poignant testimony, there was some humorous testimony, there were stories of personal loss and even moving towards tragedy. Of course, there was arrogance and hubris. So maybe I could start with, who did you think was the star witness in the trial?
From the overall presentation of the case, I think the star witnesses were really Andy Fastow, who was the former CFO, and Ben Gleason, who was the former treasurer. They were the ones that really understood a lot of the financial dealing that was going on, and they had both cut deals with the prosecutors in exchange for their testimony. So they could really take you inside the transactions themselves and what was really going on. And it made it very clear that this was an orchestrated thing that happened at Enron. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't bad judgment. It was, you know, financial engineering gone bad. But I got to say that as an observer, for me, the most moving testimony was actually one that is frequently overlooked. It was a very short, I think maybe she was on the stand for an hour or so, but her name was Joanne Cortez, and she was basically the bookkeeper at Enron who tracked the internal stock trades. So she monitored the trading accounts for the executives in Enron stock. And she was the one that was in charge of Ken Lay's account in particular. And Ken Lay, in December, right before the company filed for bankruptcy, he gathered all the employees together. He said that he still believed in the company, and he made the comment that he was a buyer of the stock. But because she saw his account, she knew. I mean, he was having all kinds of margin calls. He was selling stock like crazy. And so she knew that was a lie. And at that moment, she told this very moving story about how when she saw that, when she heard what he said, and she knew that he was lying, she went down, she just like went to the stairwell, went down to the landing in the stairwell and just started crying. Because again, you know, Enron was a company that people were proud to work for. They were excited. It was an exciting place to be. They had, you know, it was a place where everybody, not just in Houston, but all over the country, wanted to come and work. And so that moment of her disillusionment, I just thought was very moving testimony, because she was a very credible witness, obviously a very honest person, had a very strong sense of right and wrong, and got kind of caught up in this very small piece of the scandal. But it showed how a rational person looking at this objectively could just, in a very small amount of time, see that things were not right, that this is not how business should be done. And her testimony kind of came in a day when they had a number of witnesses that gave shorter testimony that just kind of emboldened this idea that the prosecution was making, that it was a designed fraud. But I just thought it was very moving. And to me, it just showed how there were so many innocent people at Enron that didn't want to believe what was happening. And, you know, when they finally found it out, there was just sort of no denying it.
I also recall testimony from employees who basically lost their entire savings, and I found that poignant. How did that, you felt, affect the jury?
Yeah, I think the prosecutors wanted to drive home the fact that there were victims to this, that it wasn't just some sort of meaningless lies or business, you know, promotion gone wrong, that it actually had real-world consequences. And Many Enron employees had invested their entire retirement accounts in Enron stock. They did that because the company actually encouraged them to do so. So there was testimony, actually the same day as Joanne Cortez, there was testimony from Johnny Nelson, who was a pipeline worker. At the time, he was working on an Enron pipeline in northern New Mexico. And, you know, he spent his career working in pipelines. He didn't really know anything about the stock market. Enron was a good company to work for, and they told him, take your retirement money, you know, buy the stock. It'll benefit you in the long run. And he did it because that's what they told him to do. And then all of a sudden, one day, you know, he comes into, you know, the field office there, and everybody's long in the face and looking scared. And, you know, he realizes he's basically lost everything he's been working for. And Johnny was just, he was a great witness because he's a no-nonsense kind of guy. He hates it when I say this, but he looks a lot like Bob Seger, the rock star. And, you know, he just came across as being very genuine. He didn't understand how courtrooms work, how trials were. I mean, you know, he had obviously had a little bit of coaching by the Justice Department, but it was just very clear that this was a guy who, you know, worked with his hands every day and, you know, was out in the field and not someone who had any idea what was going on and wound up paying, you know, a pretty significant price.
You gave us a sense in a prior episode about the testimonies of Jeff Skilling and Ken Lay. And frankly, from your description, it really seemed that they mimicked their testimony, followed their personalities, with Skilling almost professorial in his lecturing to the jury of how things were done. Ken Lay trying to be the big guy in charge. But I was wondering if you might give us a few more words about how you thought their testimony impacted the jury, or even how it might have impacted you.
Yeah, I thought that it was very interesting to watch when they got on the stand and you put a microphone in front of them and they went into executive mode. As you say, Skilling, he was professorial, but kind of a wacky professor sort of way, right? I mean, like he would go off on these long-winded descriptions about accounting rules and what they were trying to do and how it was actually this and that. And you know, well, he, you know, he didn't mean this or he didn't mean that, you know, and it was kind of this sort of weird soft shoe shuffle almost in a lot of cases. Lay very much acted like he was conducting an investor seminar. And at one point, I remember the mic kind of whistled and he sort of tapped it and said, oh, we got a hot mic here. You know, this was obviously a guy who'd given a lot of speeches and was very comfortable in front of a microphone, in front of an audience, but he had never had an audience like this because the jury, after all, is not there to just listen to what you have to say. They're going to make a decision about your future. And I don't think either of them really understood that up until the very end. You know, I think they were very convinced that they were going to get off or at least get, you know, a light sentence.
So you mentioned the testimonies of Andy Fastow and Ben Gleason. As I recall, Fastow really focused on the partnerships and how they use that to hide debt. But Gleason really gave almost a masterclass in accounting. If that's correct, could you expand on their testimony a little bit?
I think that is very correct. And Gleason's testimony was really, really damaging to Ken Lay because it showed that Lay was much more aware of what was going on with the accounting than he had let on. I mean, if you remember, what happened was Skilling had become CEO and basically Lay was stepping away from the company. Lay wanted to be kind of the elder statesman. He wanted to be, you know, sort of helping write policy in Washington, things like that. He was kind of ready to move on from the company. And then when Skilling resigned abruptly, Lay had to come back and kind of take over everything. And his argument was, well, I didn't know what Skilling had been doing. I didn't know what Andy Fastow had been. They really tried to, since Lay and Skilling were co-defendants, they really tried to lay it, to push it back on Fastow, right? We didn't know what Fastow was doing. And Gleason's testimony really showed that wasn't true, that Ken Lay did, in fact, know what was going on. Fastow focused much more on the partnerships because that was his thing, right? And keep in mind, the partnerships were really, that was where everything went wrong. And so the fact that he was able to walk people inside the partnership, see how they were set up, see how this whole intricate web was designed, and clearly, you know, there was sort of nothing there to prop it up other than the stock price. That was really important. And it kind of gets back to a point I had made in an earlier episode as well, that, you know, part of the reason Fastow wasn't so well known on Wall Street, he wasn't really the public face of Enron Finance, was because he was the deal guy. He was out putting these partnerships together and stuff, and he was always looking for new partners. He was very well known in, on the deal side of things, but he was not well known in terms of, you know, Wall Street analysts and stuff like that. And it's because most of his focus as CFO was working on the partnerships.
I'd like to ask you a few questions about the prosecutors. First of all, in their direct prosecution's case, did you find it to be, I don't want to say mundane, but almost matter of fact, going through the intricacies of not only the partnerships, but the accounting records? And did that tone change to more outrage when they cross-examined the defendants?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I think they were trying to be very careful because they knew that they had a really tough case. I mean, you know, like we said before, I mean, these are tough cases to present to a jury. There's a lot of accounting, a lot of numbers, a lot of things that many people are not familiar with. And in fact, if you were familiar with it, you probably wouldn't have gotten to the jury, right? So it's a really tough case to make, and I think they were trying to be very careful. But when they had a chance to sort of play up this human element and play up the impact and the consequences of what happened, they definitely sort of stepped up the tone and became a little more aggressive. And I think as the trial moved on and they were kind of building up to their closing arguments, that intensified to some extent.
There was an interesting episode that happened. At least you thought it was interesting. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Is this the visitors to the courtroom?
Yes.
Yeah. So we're sitting there. So again, I was in the overflow room, which was basically where all of us who were blogging or doing any actual writing during the trial, we were in a different courtroom and watching this on video because the judge didn't want all the clicking of keyboards and stuff, you know, in the courtroom. And there simply wasn't room. I mean, that was the other thing. The courtroom was pretty much full with lawyers and people connected to the case. And so there wasn't a lot of public seating or seating for the press. Anyway, so we're in the courtroom, we're in the overflow room watching Fastow's testimony, actually. And I look over and there was kind of an area where members of the public could just kind of come in and watch it. And, you know, a lot of people kind of came and went. And I looked over and there was Richard Scrushy, the CEO of HealthSouth, which at the time was embroiled in its own corporate accounting scandal. And it was just like this surreal thing, like suddenly he's sitting there, you know. And so, of course, when there was a break, you know, we interviewed him and he said he was there because he happened to be in town. He knew what it was like to have a crooked CFO undermine the company, and he wanted to hear Fastow's testimony. And he, of course, thought it was just all a bunch of crap, and you know, was very dismissive of it. But it was just an interesting moment. You know, the trial attracted these kind of weird figures sometimes.
Well, Lauren, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode, but I hope our listeners will join us for episode 4 when we take up the verdict. I can't wait.
Thanks a lot.
This is Tom Fox. In episode 3, Trial of the Century, the Enron trial, we take a deep dive into the testimony of the witnesses at trial. Lauren has some great remembrances, the individual witnesses. For instance, the accounting fraud was really put on through two people, former Enron employees, Ben Gleason and Andy Fastow. As Lauren said, Ben Gleason put on a masterclass on accounting and how Enron manipulated its accounting through fraudulent numbers to come up with a rosy forecast. Andy Fastow, of course, was in charge of the partnerships and how Enron surreptitiously and illegally hid debt off its books by creating partnerships where he was the managing partner in direct conflict of interest in his role as chief financial officer at Enron. These two witnesses largely destroyed the defense of Ken Lay that he didn't know. Lay had originally claimed that he wasn't aware of any of these partnerships or accounting fraud when he left the company in early 2000. But when he came back after Jeff Skilling resigned abruptly, obviously he was well aware of what was going on. And Ben Gleason and Andy Fastow really demonstrated this. But Lauren pointed to two other people whose testimony he felt was very poignant and very important. The first was Joanne Cortez. And Joanne Cortez had the role of recording the sale of Enron stock by Enron executives. And in late October, Ken Lay gave a speech to Enron employees where he said that Enron stock was still a good value and that they should not only hold their stock, but invest in more. Well, at the same time, Ken Lay was divesting himself of almost all of his Enron stock. Due to the precipitous decline in Enron stock price, he was having multiple margin calls and other calls on his stock. And Joanne Cortez, and I remember this, it was so poignant, I remember it from Lauren's article, at the time of the trial, after he gave that speech, she went into a stairwell and cried because she knew what Ken Lay was saying was not true. Enron stock was not of good value, and he was not a buyer of Enron stock. And indeed, she didn't feel like she could sell her stock because she knew the truth. The second witness was Johnny Nelson. And Johnny was a pipe fitter and pipe layer in New Mexico for Enron. And he was encouraged, as were all Enron employees, to invest all of their monies in Enron stock, and he did. And he came in one day to find his stock was worthless, and his entire retirement had been wiped out. So he became the face of many of the victims of Enron from the fraud perpetrated by Ken Lay and Jeff Skilling. We talked about the prosecutors and the difficulty of the case they had. In many ways, an accounting fraud case can be extremely difficult, and you have to be able to tell a story. And Lauren detailed how they actually told the story of the accounting fraud through the witnesses, and how they were matter-of-fact and fairly straightforward on their direct presentation. But they became increasingly outraged during the defense's case, culminating in the cross-examination of Jeff Skilling and Ken Lay, for two men who never saw the error of their ways, never thought they'd done anything wrong, and indeed blamed everyone else for their own fraud. This episode was a fascinating review of some of the key testimony of the trial. I know you will enjoy it. I hope you've listened to it, and I hope you'll re-listen to it for more insights. I hope you'll join us tomorrow in episode 4, where we hike up the verdict.